committee on a gorgeous 65 degrees is the high today, from what I hear. February what, Steve? The 22nd?
Or 23rd.
23rd.
Side, doing the people.
That's right. When they called caucus yesterday, I was like, oh boy. So today we're going to get back into urban renewal. We're going to focus more directly on Senate Bill 412, and we're going to hear from Mayor Williams and Senator Schrader here first. But the big discussion that we're going to take this urban renewal discussion from the broader context of understanding urban renewal and looking at five or six different ideas, and I think they're being drafted, Dr. Ayala, as amendments now to Senate Bill 412. But we really want to focus today on the contents of Senate Bill 412, which is related to school funding. And as I said yesterday, we are more focused on the state school fund than we ever have been. And it's partly because the fiscal structure of the state has required more and more of a commitment to school funding because of Measure 5 and an over-reliance on the income tax. And so I think this is part of that overall direction, and I think you'll see it in other committees, having to make really tough choices and discussions around school funding and the state school fund. With that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 412 and call up Senator Schrader and former Mayor Williams. Steve, can you give us a brief blow-by-blow on Senate Bill 412 and the revenue impact that we have?
Mr. Chair, the measure eliminates the use of school property taxes to fund future urban renewal plans, and it applies then to the school property taxes on the excess value generated by the plan. And it defines school district very broadly to include school districts, education service districts, and community colleges, so all of the districts that fall into that group. And it basically separates the old plans from new plans. The new plans the bill will apply to. All of the existing plans will continue as is unless they are substantially modified. And then for the revenue impact, since it's prospective, it only applies to new plans, new excess value generated in those new plan areas, so that there isn't a lot of information to go by on what the amount of that excess value might be, how quickly it will be generated in those plan areas, and how much that might then generate for school districts. I've put a little table there on the revenue impact statement that lists the districts and the average tax rates that would be applied to the excess value when it's available. The other thing to note is that when that excess value is there in a school district, it would generate additional local property taxes as part of the school equalization formula revenue. And so then that would then cause some shift of state dollars away from those school districts that have the additional property taxes to all other school districts. But it would also increase the total funds available for schools in that process.
So, Steve, what is the 5,410 figure? Is that...
That would be the dollars generated by the average tax rates of those districts on each additional $1 million of excess value generated.
So if I was looking for a grand total figure, is that feasible to...
It's not very feasible because of it being prospective and not knowing where those plan areas are going to be and what the expected growth in excess value within those plan areas will be as they are developed.
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'm Senator Kurt Schrader, Senate District 20. My comments will be brief for two reasons. One, I'm not the real progenitor of this measure. This comes from Mayor Williams, who's had a lot of experience in this area, more experience certainly than I, and secondly, because I'm supposed to be somewhere else right now. But with all due deference, I think this is a great opportunity. I appreciate the committee's willingness to delve into this a little bit, but a great opportunity for citizens to understand a little bit more about urban renewal districts. Certainly they provide a great function in our communities, allow for some leveraging for some exciting economic development opportunities. However, those are limited to capital opportunities in our urban renewal districts. And I think it's important for citizens to understand that there are trade-offs you make when you go into an urban renewal district. One example I'll give is my own hometown of Canby, Oregon, that tried to catch the wave of urban renewal districts and was in the process about 4 or 5 years, about 6 years ago, I guess, in terms of developing one. And their original plan was to include every single business entity, the entire business district, in an urban renewal district. There were some citizens in the fire district that pointed out that that would mean that we could build all sorts of buildings and we'd have no operating capital to staff them, and that caused some interest. At that point in time, there was a prolonged discussion over a couple of years, and that urban renewal district did go forward in a smaller form. They ended up cutting that district, I think, in half or almost down to a third of its original size, trying to bite off a smaller chunk of a new industrial area that we're moving forward on, pretty exciting, hopefully going to create some great jobs and an increased tax base for the community over the next 20 years. But that's an example of the type of thing that I don't think people understood. And what also got surfaced at that same hearing, and I understood from before, thanks to my service here in the state legislature, is that it's the school property taxes that are levied also become part of that urban renewal district. Ergo, the funds that would normally go to school funding are then caught up in building capital improvements in urban renewal districts that have little or nothing to do with schools. And one wonders if citizens actually know that. The goal from my standpoint behind this bill, and I'd be interested in what John has to say, is that at this point in time, when our school funding dollars are scarce, we have 3,000 people on the steps of the Capitol wondering why we haven't increased our K-12 budget virtually at all over the last 8 years. You know, we were $4.8 billion in 1999, for gosh sakes, and unless we change things, we'll be at $4.9 or $5 billion at this point in time. I think citizens say that's unacceptable. So other than raising taxes, what are our alternatives to provide increased school support? And one of those is to look at the future growth in urban potential urban renewal districts, and can we have increased dollars by cutting the school districts out of urban renewal, if you will, so their property tax base would accrue to the schools and not to the urban renewal district. My hope would be that the budget people here in Salem would not then back out general funds, so it's a zero-sum game, but it would be additive situation where we're getting a little more money locally. That would mean that the money we are able to put in and would continue to hopefully increase here in the, at the state level would augment what's going in at the local level, and we'd be able to do a much better job for our kids at schools. So that's the reason I'm very interested in this and look forward to the committee's deliberations. And with that, I'll answer questions or turn it over to the mayor.
Well, we'll let you get on your way. The one question that we have is, you're not going to hear it, but we're going to hear it after you depart. The argument on the other side of the coin is that you're ultimately better off if you're concerned with school funding because of the successes of these urban renewal districts and the escalated property value, that ultimately 20 or 30 years down the road, you'll have, I guess, a rising tide lifts all boats, and you'll have, because of higher property values, you'll have lifted all the boats, and schools ultimately, you have a better community, more prosperity. I don't know if Canby or Oregon City has experienced that, but that certainly is the argument that that we heard yesterday and we'll hear again today. And I don't know if you want to take a swing at it or...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll prefer to punt that one at this point in time because I think that is the crutch. I mean, that's really the issue. You know, can we wait 20 years, a little shorter, a little longer, depending on the success of the urban renewal district, for that to occur? I will say one thing, though, in that regard. What has happened now, if it was just a defined time frame, I think your point would be extremely well taken, and maybe some communities would be in a financial position to wait 20 years. I'd argue there's some that can't. However, what's happened, and a big issue that I see occurring now, is urban renewal districts are automatically updated. We've gotten past the point now, and I know it's by design, by statute, by rule, or by just custom, where they're automatically renewed. And that, to me, is an issue then. You know, if there's a set endpoint that then the school districts could benefit from that increased value, I think that would be a good argument, but I would hope the committee would discuss that. Thank you. I will excuse myself if that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
See you
later. Mayor Williams.
To answer your question about or speculation, philosophy about all the boats being benefiting from the rise in the tide, I think Oregon City's boat has a big leak. I can almost tell you positively that there have been very little property values increased around urban renewal agencies because Oregon City hasn't done any economic development projects except one with all the funds they spent in 25 years. And so there has been no increase, quote, in property values unless you think a street being paved increases the property values around it, but the assessors say it doesn't. It doesn't make any difference if you pave downtown street. It doesn't raise the tax level at all. So in Oregon City, I think the boat's got a huge leak, and it may be going under. In fact, three of the commissioners, I think, believe that point and are probably about to vote out at least half of the urban renewal agency in Oregon City tonight. No, next Wednesday night.
Hmm.
Of course, the reason I pursued this for so long, you mentioned when you talk, the senator talks about billions of dollars in education funds. What I was looking at didn't look like much, but at first, when two sessions ago, the education funds were only short $25 million. That's all they were looking for. And I was looking at urban renewal excess value times school rates that showed there was at least $25 million being taken from schools via the process. So I began to think about, well, let's just stop taking that money. Let's just cut schools out. Well, I was told right away by revenue that you couldn't because of the contractual obligations. And so I stewed about that for a couple of sessions until it finally hit me one day, why not the future? Why not do something about building this back into the schools and future urban renewal agencies? And, of course, this, the point that the senator raised that urban renewal agencies almost get automatically renewed is something I hadn't thought of right at the moment, but they might also be included in what I'm talking about. My first hope was then exempt schools from the division of taxes in the future. And I hope that the bill goes forward with that in there, but it doesn't look like it now. And talk about, you know, I'm not an expert in facts, and he talks about the future. I guess I looked at the past, and I say, well, what was it in the past? So in 10 or 15 years, what will it be if we prohibit future urban renewal agencies from dividing the taxes? So I just used the state figures for excess value. That's the property values that are denied to schools when they work up their formulas. If you take the total of the excess for 2003-04, it's about $6.25 billion of excess value in all the urban renewal agencies. I think there's 50 of them in the state. Don't hold me to that because I guess the state's figures are correct, but my addition might not be. If you take just the $5, which is the maximum operating that any school can tax, you get at least $30 or $33 million worth of money that went out this last year. Now, that ignores the idea there might be some expansion of property values beside the urban renewal agencies, and that might bring in some money to offset that. But actually, the total, and if I hadn't thought of this even until one of the superintendents asked me, what's it been over the past year's total? So last night, I just sat down and tried to do it backwards, taking today's estimate and reducing it 3% a year, and you can get the $250 million lost out of the state school funds in the last 10 years easy. And if you count bonds, by the way, before 2001, school bonds also were subject to division of taxes. Well, that's $200,000 a year right now in Oregon City that taxpayers are paying that they think is going to reduce their bond indebtedness, but it's really going to the urban renewal agency. But the schools aren't losing on that one. They're not backfilled on it. The schools are allowed to add on. So if the rate to pay back the bond was $1.50 a thousand, they can add on 2 or 3 cents to that, and that way they get the $200,000. So they're not really the losers. A lady in, I think it was Coos Bay, called that the hidden tax, because I'll bet that 9,999 people out of 10,000 don't know that they're paying part of their bond fund money into urban renewal. So if you count that in there, this is even more of a loss, but it comes from the taxpayers. And the senator mentioned that the key for me has been, I just find it unconscionable that school operating funds are the paid by all the voters of all the states through income taxes are then converted to capital costs in particular areas of the state. You know, if I were in Burns or in Baker, I don't think Baker has new, I'd be madder than heck that I'm paying into urban renewal funds in Oregon City or in Portland. By the way, Portland is the biggest, of course, obviously. I think I quickly last night came up with $10 million lost this year, last year, to urban renewal. It'll buy a lot of things in schools. I think the lobbyist for the school superintendent, for the superintendent said he divided out one time as at least $75,000 per school district per year been lost. That's a teacher or something else. And secondly, if you don't, in your wisdom, after you're debating, you can't see that you can separate the schools out of this. I can see they should have the option of going in or out, the school boards, because that would give them control over their fate. It would also be a way in which we could make this more transparent. If the school board could say, for instance, in Oregon City, they spent $2.5 million of renewal money on an intersection, which is important to the high school. The 2,500 kids going through that intersection every day, the school buses were idling through five or six signal lights and burning up diesel before we fixed it. Now it's in pretty good shape. So they might want to opt into that bit of the urban renewal, but they're sure not going to opt into putting paving bricks on downtown Oregon City, because that doesn't benefit the schools at all. But then, as I said before, I can't see a school board ever opting in, because that's a lot of money. If they have a long view of what the state's education problems are, they might. But a gentleman just told me a while ago, he said his school superintendent didn't give a darn about this. Those were his words, not give a darn, but there was some reluctance to come support this kind of an effort because it didn't affect them because they were backfilled. But he is not thinking about what's going on beyond that. If that's not possible, I'm going down the ladder here of maybe options. Perhaps you could excuse part of that excess value or give it back to the school. Say give half of it and the other half goes to the urban renewal agency. And if all of those are unacceptable to you, that frozen base that they talked about yesterday, and then the other figure, take that frozen base and add some percentage for operating inflation, and in the case of the cities, for police or fire, since they have to cover it. Make that base grow at some rate, which would at least cover the inflation that the schools might have or the state.
That was Senator Metzger's. He asked me again about that yesterday.
Yeah.
After the 20 years, could you have that base grow? Because with measure 5 and 50, it's frozen.
Yeah. Oh, is it by 5 or 50?
That's my understanding. It can only grow at 3%, although we'll get folks up here who will...
Okay. Well, that's another idea that might help both the schools and the city. Beyond those kind of ideas, I am the expertise to tell you what else might happen in terms of strategies, but there are some things in 457 that bother me a lot, and one has to do with the state, so you might have something to say about it. That's oversight. Now, we heard yesterday in Portland they weren't too anxious to see changes in the law because they have a different system, and they have a strong city council where the councilors are paid or commissioners are paid to be there, and they're there 24 hours a day. If you go to Oregon City or any small town, we're just amateurs, and we have jobs to do, and we're dependent on somebody on the staff to interpret it. And if he doesn't do it right, or if he jumps the in not an appropriate project, then we have no way of knowing. And I think more oversight should be directed from the state to the agencies to make sure they're doing the right things. And I'll point out some things which we never did in Oregon City, which are in the law. This comes to me because I tried to call, and not faulting anyone here, pointing blame, but I tried to call the state and find out, well, who does this? Nobody does. The revenue department looks at your books. It does a little audit, but they don't say anything else about the appropriateness of a project or anything. So I think some strong oversight from the state would be necessary.
Do you know what form that would take? to have better oversight over?
Well, I think some kind of an annual inspection, or inspection of the annual plan. When the plan is produced, then maybe that plan would have to go through some state officer or state person and say, well, we think these projects meet the criterion, or have you done this, or have you done that? For instance, 457.053H says, a fiscal impact statement that estimates the impact of the tax increment financing both until and after the indebtedness is repaid upon all entities levying the taxes, etc. So they're saying here, you must prepare that kind of impact statement. I don't ever remember that being done in Oregon City. We never called the school board and said, hey, your impact on your budget is going to be this, or even sent a report. They never received a copy of the report or commented back on it. And 457 says the city can take it or leave it if they reply back. But at least we never did it. I didn't know it was required until it was too late, until I was out of the job. That I think would get to the point of transparency again. If they had to talk to the school board or talk to the fire district or talk to the county about what they were doing, there'd be some way that that might be publicized. In the case of Oregon City, all school board meetings are televised. The Oregon City Commission is televised, so there might be some additional exposure there.
So, Mayor, on that one, are you envisioning, and I think it's an intriguing idea, that the city or the urban renewal agency would go to the school board? I mean, in some cases, you have multiple jurisdictions, so you have there'd be two or three school boards for that one city, but they would go and
I think so.
Ask for an binding vote or an advisory vote.
I'd say that the city manager or the mayor or somebody ought to go there and stand up in front of them and say, this is the impact on your budget, and how do you feel about it under the present situation? If we change it in the future, perhaps it should be a binding vote from the school board that says, yes, we approve of your plan. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then the plan goes down the tube, but I don't think so. The ORS 457 calls for a much more extensive public notification than we ever did in Oregon City or I've ever noticed in any other entity. It calls for, and I don't have it right in front of me, but you notify voters, all of them, you notify all postal recipients, or you notify all businesses. There's an extensive list of things you should do to notify people about what the plan is. I don't remember a postcard going out from Oregon City about urban renewal. I remember a postcard going out about votes when they were, or a land change which affected somebody's property, but I don't remember any going out about urban renewal. And the other, I don't know how you got at this, but whenever, let's take Oregon City again, the only one I know, they've now announced they're going to repave 99E and do some fancy fixing up of pedestrian crossings, and it's going to cost the city for $2.5 million. The state's going to throw some money into it too. It's a state highway. I don't know why we're digging with it, but we are. But they say it's paid for by urban renewal funds. Well, everybody thinks, oh well, it's all paid for. Instead of saying it's going to be paid for by school funds, by county funds, by fire district funds, by vector funds, they don't say that. So everybody immediately thinks, oh, it's all taken care of because we got this free money from urban renewal. But it really is tax money that they should know about and make a choice on. Mm-hmm. They should be able to say, no, we don't want to spend, in this case, in Oregon City, about half of the money comes from school. So $1.3 million or something like that is going to be spent on paving 99E through Oregon City instead of being spent on teacher somewhere in the state or whatever. I think that's a crime. Urban renewal in general, I don't think any agency should be able to open a plan unless it can prove conclusively that what they're going to do will keep values from going down. In other words, again, in Oregon City, we had the first project, the only one that was economics, was bare land. The value of that land is not going to go down in the middle of a city. So why would we want to put an urban renewal agency on it? It'll grow by itself. By the way, to divert myself a little bit again, yesterday I said, and I wanted to repeat, that the one project in Oregon City that was done under urban renewal was called Red Soils, and it cost, after bond service, about $5 million. the value there is now $20 million or $25 million, and it only brings $100,000 or $150,000 in taxes per year, and it'll take 50 years to pay for. Now, even I, dummy on economics, can figure out that somehow that doesn't work. If you borrow money at 5%, you should be able to at least get 10% return on it. No use borrowing the money if you're a businessman. You must make something more than what you borrowed, and they're consistently not doing that with urban renewal funds as far as I can see.
Mayor Williams.
Yes, sir.
I'm having a hard time grasping how we would have anyone be able to demonstrate that they're not going to have any type of downturn in that type of investment, just knowing that there's many other factors that besides, you know, the property itself. So I'm not sure how we could actually obligate or expect anyone to be able to give that type of guarantee.
Okay, well, for example, when the Hilltop Urban Renewal Agency in Oregon City was drawn up, it did not include, it did include Fred Meyer and another shopping center, which were not going to go downhill. They're prosperous and growing. It did not include the third one. After they realized they weren't making very much money on that in the early days, they gerrymandered in the next shopping center, and it brought in $20 million worth of value. Well, they've never spent a dime on that, and I don't think that should be legal. I don't think they should be able to rope in any property they want just to build up the profits in the urban renewal area. They should have to prove that somehow that that's going to have an effect on that property and make it worth more. It hasn't. It's just grown by its own, the shopping center. Okay,
that's a little more clear for me. Thank you.
The thought I had on that, Senator Brzezinski, and maybe Dr. Ayala, if it's not too time-consuming, that we could look at other states and whether it was the definition of blight, which is kind of your entry point into urban renewal, or have they put sideboards on, some form of sideboard, so that when you're looking at expanding, and everything that you're testifying to kind of goes in that direction of at least upping the ante and challenging a city or an agency before they go out to really have done, whether it's gone to the school board, really met a tighter definition of blight. So I would be interested to know, is Oregon a state that just kind of left it pretty broad? That's my guess, but it could be wrong. Or have other states kind of narrowed that framework of when a city might go out and form an urban renewal district and how they might do it?
I was going to ask for the same thing. I think that definitely needs to be tightened, because you can talk to any member of any commissioner. They don't know what it is. They just read it and they say, well, I don't know. And then the staff will come about and say, well, we can get around it by this and this, and this paragraph allows us to do this. It needs some tightening up. I guess I said it once before, but I think the sources of money must be identified up front, not just the usual double talk of excess values and property rises and the boats rise with the tide and all of that, but really get down to it and say, in the report, this is going to cost the school this much, and so forth.
It would be harder.
Somehow, there needs to be a better public education, as the senator said, about UR and the finances. I don't know exactly how to do that. Maybe the state can take a role in that. The other one that bothers me a lot is the matter about tax bills. It was stated yesterday by one of the proponents that you can see on your tax bill what you're paying for urban renewal. Well, you can. It's now just one total out there. But it doesn't tell you that it comes from schools or wherever. So
you think there should be some line on our property tax bill that says schools, fire, police?
Yeah, it should be broken out. Even in Oregon City, we still have a levy. We're entitled to levy the difference. And so the levy is 52 cents enacted every year by the commission. It even shows in that 300 there. It doesn't show that we're paying a special levy even in that $300. It used to. I don't know why they decided to change it. But at one time, you could even see your special levy, and it's 52 cents or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess that, not taking a lot more time, I'm still very much interested in seeing that the schools get a break on this, and the only way I can see it is to excuse them from division of taxes. I don't think any of the other plans would work. Well, unless you gave the school the option to opt out, that might take care of it. But as we said out in the hall, that may also kill a lot of urban renewal agencies, because in Oregon City, you're going to talk about half the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the bond lecturers
lecture was yesterday about how much the money has to be before the bond salesmen are happy, but it would sure cut into the profits in a hurry. Make that projection go out a lot further, and of course, that's the worst thing that can happen, to have the urban renewal agencies last longer. Just one more point on finances, and again, I'm not an expert, I'm not an economist, but the proposal now in Oregon City, and I'll take some credit for starting this, but I didn't want it to go this way. We have the hopes of having a large corporation come into Oregon City and develop some property very extensively to $200 or $300 million worth. The present city government thinks they have to entice that corporation by offering them $18 million worth of urban renewal funds. Well, by the time you pay the bond, I mean the service on it, it's $36 million. You have to double it over the life of the bonds. If you think about how much even $300 million again brings in taxes, it's $1.5 million. So how long is it going to take to pay off the bond that you're borrowing? Which means you're just extending the urban renewal agency out forever, 15, 20, 25 years. And all that time, the schools are not getting any of the profits, any of the money from that, because the urban renewal agency is still intact, and all the values in the whole urban renewal agency are denied the schools, as well as, I won't repeat myself, but it doesn't work for small towns, let's put it that way. It may work for Portland, it may work for PDC, and they may be able to show that the value is rising around the property. Again, though, that 3% limitation just about puts that to a moot point. The property's only rising at 3% around it. It doesn't pay for the money you're spending on urban renewal. But even if it was free, all new construction, it still doesn't work as far as I can find. And any of the documents I've looked at, and I've been looking at for 10 years, I think I finally begin to understand 457, but maybe not. One more. In the termination talk about the one in Oregon City, immediately the lawyers and the bond salesmen and the consultants were all arguing about how one closes an urban renewal agency and whether the asset would come back and how much they would be and so forth. And I went to the assessor and he gave me a pretty straightforward report on how it's done. And yet when you get to the experts, they all have ways to say, you can't do that and you'll only get this. And it seems like closing it's going to be more difficult than opening it.
Do you mean closing it prematurely or just closing it?
Just closing it when
the life of the... Okay, well, we'll get into...
Yeah.
Really want to thank you for bringing us the bill. I think it could provide a valuable vehicle for we've now had, and I think Dr. Ayala is listing them out, about 8 or 9 ideas from Ms. Williams yesterday to the City Club to yourself to Senator Metzger's idea, which I'd like to include on that, is how do you, once an urban renewal district has started and frozen those property values, is it possible and is it legal to, at the 20-year end of it or 30-year end of it, bump those up other than the 3%, and perhaps it's a measure 4750 catch that you just can't do it, and that's just one of the other sacrifices you're making when you create an urban renewal district.
I don't mean to cloud the waters here, but I know you're familiar with another proposal on taxation that's going to come to your attention, and that's a land value site tax.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of advantages that solve a lot of these problems you're speaking of, so it might be that you want to consider that and along with this at some point and see what the comparison might be to changing the whole system, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of using urban renewal, use some other kind of incentive for people to build and prosper rather than giving them subsidies underneath the table.
Yeah. We will look at that, although I'm not sure if the time has come for vote of the people on that one, but we're certainly going to look at it this session, and should say that Portland Development Commission did not submit that proposal. They were concerned that proposal came from them and it didn't come from the PDC.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mayor Williams. Yeah, appreciate it.
Right.
And, Dr. you got Senator Metzger's, that his question was, and we should have an answer to it, and if it needs to be an amendment, is can, when an urban renewal district is created and the property value is frozen, 20 years later, when it is then completed, what are the property values, and can the state, with Measure 4750, are they frozen at where they were, say, 1990? In 2010, are they where they were in 1990, other than the 3%? even though obviously the hope is that the property value has escalated a great deal. So if we could get an answer to that, and if there is anything statutory that we can do, I suspect not.
It's constitutional.
Talk to Bill Sizemore is probably the... okay, let's go to... we'll just go right down the list. Michelle Deister and Todd Scott from Astoria. Just spent a wonderful weekend in Astoria this last weekend.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities. And with me today is Todd Scott from the City of Astoria and their Urban Renewal Agency. Wanted to shift the focus of this discussion away a little bit from just the metro area.
Thank you.
I know you've heard from PDC, and I know you've heard from a resident of Oregon City, and urban renewal is going on all over the state, as you well know. There's been a lot of discussion about whether or not urban renewal is effective. We believe that it is, and not just in the metro area, as Todd is going to tell you. We acknowledge that not every urban renewal district is going to generate the same return as the Pearl District in Portland or Rondler Acres in Hillsborough. There are differences in your scale and your needs and your opportunities in smaller areas. But I think that it should be noted that even small jurisdictions have had success with this program. For example, 135 jobs created in White City is a big deal to that community. In Harrisburg, their urban renewal area took some barren industrial land and ran city services out to it, and that helped six new employers locate there, and that's 92 jobs, which again is a big deal in a community of 3,012 people. So there are examples. It is a flexible tool, and that is part of what makes it usable for the smaller communities. As we've heard today, urban renewal is about trade-offs. I think everyone here understands that you are foregoing revenue in the short term in hopes that you grow and stabilize your property tax base in the long term. Again, obviously, as we've heard today, it's not an instant gratification kind of program. It takes time, and in a lot of cases, it takes a significant amount of time before some of these private investments start to happen. And understandably, that is a source of frustration, but, you know, even when urban renewal doesn't always work miracles, it certainly positions a community to take advantage of future opportunities that they wouldn't have had otherwise. If you build it, they may not necessarily come, but it certainly ups the odds that they will, I guess is what I would say. And, obviously it's not appropriate for every community. That's why 240 cities haven't implemented it. Not every community is interested in implementing an urban renewal agency because it requires a lot of homework. It requires a lot of long-term commitment, expertise, cooperation, and it requires public support. I think Senator Schrader's discussion of Canby, and the discussions that community had is a very good example of the local political process being allowed to work. Folks did get involved and interested, and, the urban renewal plan was changed based on that input, and that is the way that it's supposed to happen. There are those sideboards in statute, and, that's why we put them there. All of that public input, I think, helps ensure that your urban renewal area is going to be more successful, as well as the private bond market forces as well. There are certain hurdles and a bar that you have to meet before these things ever even get off the ground. And obviously whether urban renewal is right for a community is one of those things that can only be answered by the residents and the elected officials that live there. So I guess wearing my advocacy hat, the changes that this committee considers, we would ask that, first of all, that they maintain the effectiveness and the flexibility and that they honor existing commitments to bondholders. Obviously, if you take participants out of urban renewal, that's like taking the gas out of the economic engine of the car. There may not be enough fuel left to turn it over and get the thing started. If you would keep those points in mind as you deliberate on some of these changes, that would certainly be our hope, and we are poised to work with you in terms of questions and concerns that you have on some of those governance issues, and those are certainly things that we could take a look at. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Scott and have him tell you a little bit about Astoria's issues, and we'll keep it brief knowing that there are other folks here.
Great, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks for coming to Astoria, by the way. We appreciate your visiting us. I'm here to tell you that urban renewal has worked very well for my small town. Astoria, before urban renewal, was basically a two-industry town, lumber and fishing, seafood processing. And when those industries both dropped, essentially, we had 75 seafood processing industries at one time. We're down to three now. All of the forestry products have gone out of Astoria, basically. And they left us with brownfields and a struggling economy. And so our first urban renewal district was implemented in 1980, primarily for downtown and riverfront development. Since that time, we've had seven amendments to that particular plan, so we have periodic review of what's going on, and we've adjusted it to accommodate those things that we felt were necessary to accomplish. We do have a very small district. It was quite focused on those two particular areas. To date, we've had nearly $25 million in investment within the urban renewal district itself, at least $20 million adjacent to the district, and over 100 jobs within the district. Without the school option for us, we would have had to scale back those projects by about a third, actually. Some of the specific projects that have had a significant impact for us are related to education, actually. The OSU Seafood Center was installed in our district, and urban renewal served as a catalyst for that project. We've also implemented infrastructure improvements, street infrastructure and parking for the Astoria High School football field. The aquatic center was leveraged, a new aquatic center was leveraged for the community using urban renewal funds, and that center is used widely in our region and also by the Astoria High School groups and other high school groups for swim meets and to practice. Urban renewal has had an impact on tourism. Our Liberty Theater, which as a significant historic structure, is being restored in part due to urban renewal. We're leveraging $50,000 worth of urban renewal funds for $500,000 in improvements for a plaza at our train depot and for Lewis and Clark visitors that are coming this year. We have leveraged urban renewal funds for riverfront development. Our river walk is now a 4-mile trail throughout town along the Columbia River. And we've had a six-screen movie theater installed in the urban renewal district as well. It's also had a significant impact on health care. We're a regional health care center, and we've had new medical office buildings built in the district, and we're expecting more. We have more on the drawing board at the moment. The end result is that we were an economically depressed community that's made incredible improvements using urban renewal funds. It's taken years, and we've had to be very patient with it, but without it, we'd be much worse off than we are today. In Astoria, urban renewal has served as a primary catalyst for tourism. It's a significant source of economic development. It's been a model tool for restoration of historic buildings. It's been a significant contributor to our existing healthcare facilities and our educational facilities, and it's served to enhance the quality of life for all of our citizens. So we feel like urban renewal has had a dramatic impact on Astoria's revitalization. We've been in the New York Times. We were designated last year one of the National Trust's dozen distinctive destinations, and much of that is due in part to much of that is due to urban renewal and the impacts that it's had on our community. Thanks for the opportunity to tell you a little bit about our story.
Yeah, no, it's timely for me. I was experienced the benefits of urban renewal in Astoria over the weekend. Questions for the panel? So I have a couple. How much in Astoria, and this is taking from Mayor Williams some of his suggestions, how much did, if you can, we had the $100 million figure for South Waterfront in Portland yesterday. Do you have a figure in the last 5 years how much your TIF money has generated in terms of projects, 5 or 10 years, or
The actual TIF money that has been generated to date is just a little over $2 million, and then that has leveraged in the district $25 million. This is over the life of the district thus far. $25 million in the district and at least $20 million outside of the district, immediately adjacent to the district.
So 25 leveraged inside your urban. And how large is that urban renewal district?
Our urban renewal district is about 50 acres. So. Yeah, it's roughly, it's probably 15 or 20 blocks, and city blocks.
So not to be unfair to my colleagues here, but if I'm at the Hotel Elliott, is it just basically from there and going?
We have just a small piece of it that runs from the Liberty Theater east, and once you hit 17th Street, which is where the Maritime Museum is, uh-huh. It spreads out and sort of goes from the river to the hillside and then back a few more blocks.
Uh-huh.
All of the, where you saw the new movie theater, where you saw the new hardware store, where you saw the aquatic center, where you saw the seafood center, all of that stuff, all of those buildings along the highway as you're coming into town before you get to downtown, is those are all products of urban renewal.
I mostly just saw the bar at the Alaska.
Well, that's a good place to get a view of the river. That's not in our urban renewal district. Most of the downtown area is not actually within our urban renewal district. It was the catalyst for developing the urban renewal district was primarily the old county fairgrounds, which were a bunch of dilapidated buildings that were about to fall down. And so that particular piece was the centerpiece of our urban renewal district, to see that those buildings removed, the county fairground moved to a larger area where they could accommodate more events, and then we took that property and began developing it.
Okay, so in this case, you have a tremendous success, and I would agree, just a great success, although it would be interesting to see, and you give the Harrisburg example, of how much of that private investment would have come otherwise, and how much of it is directly attributable to the urban renewal district, knowing just a little bit about the folks at the Hotel Elliott. Where did they come? My guess is Asbury is such a fantastic town and doing such great things that there's a market there. And how you develop that synergy. But the question is, because I would guess you've got buy-in from the citizens of Astoria, mm-hmm. In terms of the vision, would it be a good step to say, since there is implications on police, fire, and schools, to make it more transparent that when you're considering, you go to the school board in Astoria and you ask them to take a vote and buy in and get better community buy-in at that point to the vision that you're developing, and would that be a fair statutory change?
We certainly, when the plan was implemented, we certainly had participation from the school district, and I think you will find that the school superintendent now will tell you that urban renewal, his piece of urban renewal, is significant to him and has a dramatic impact on the community. I think you will find that the president of the community college will tell you the same thing. We're actually looking at the possibility of relocating the part of the community college in the district, and so they're very excited about what urban renewal can do for them.
Hmm. Okay, so that would be a good change, is to have a vote of the school board, just to get more community buy-in.
I'd have to defer to staff on whether, I think the community certainly needs to be told what's going on, absolutely, and we did that when the plan was implemented, and I think it's... we're very quite transparent in Astoria, and so we do everything we can to let people know where their money's going, and any buy-in from staff, school staff, college staff would be helpful.
Okay.
And if I might respond to that, Mr. Chair, as I mentioned, those statutory sideboards that do require that consultation with those taxing districts, it may not necessarily be in the form of a vote of those particular boards or other taxing districts, but there is a requirement that you go and you prepare a fiscal impact statement. Now, if that didn't happen in a particular case, as we've heard, then that's an issue, but that's certainly not the case statewide. And if you don't have that buy-in, then frankly, your urban renewal agency is not going to get off the ground, and it's not going to be able to produce.
But should we do a vote? I mean, to me, when you ask for a vote, in some ways, Mayor Williams, I did. You get more transparency, and you get the schools. And I don't know how you would do it in police and fire because it's such a different model. But then you would get the school folks saying, yes, we bought into this vision, and we're willing. And for them, it's an easier question than a direct. Even though it's out a few years, it's been a $9 million or whatever disappropriation because it comes out of the state school fund, so it affects every school district in the state. I'm hearing that you would be supportive of that change, but I don't want to.
Well, I think it's a policy decision that this committee certainly needs to make. All I'm saying is that those communications definitely need to happen. I can't really directly, you know, talk to should you take a vote, should you not. I guess that's going to be, you know, dependent upon how strongly a particular school district feels about urban renewal in the particular area that it's being proposed.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I'll have to check and see if our school board voted on it at some point, because that quite possibly could have happened. We vote on everything in Astoria.
Well, that's kind of the Oregon way.
It
we
is
vote
indeed.
On everything in Oregon. Well, thank you. I think it's really helpful to get something outside of the metropolitan area, and Astoria is a great example of, I think, a city on that's done some great, great things.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions or comments? Thank you very much. Hasina Squires, Mr. Kyle Gorman, Mr. Alex Jensen, and Ms. Squires.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires here today on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Our membership consists of approximately 800 or 900 special service districts throughout the state of Oregon, and within that membership, 300 we represent 300 rural fire protection districts. Today with me, to my right, is I was going to say Alex Jensen. He's not.
You can call him Alex Jensen.
Yeah, no, Alex to my left. And to my right is Kyle Gorman with Clackamas County Fire, the executive officer with Clackamas County Fire District Number 1, the second largest fire district in the state. I should have started with Alex since he is representing the largest fire district in the state. But since you're here, Kyle, I'll start with you. Clackamas County Fire District Number 1, and then to my left, Alex Jensen with Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, which serves 9 cities, 3 and portions of 3 unincorporated counties, and 400 citizens. 400,000 citizens. Sorry, excuse me. You guys should have switched sides because I was not prepared
well,
for you to be on either side.
Can we get some coffee or some...
Thank you, Senator Deckard. I just would like to just make a few comments on behalf of our association prior to turning it over to these two gentlemen, even though I can't remember which one is which. The Special Districts Association isn't necessarily opposed to the creation and formation of urban renewal districts. As you know, as Michelle pointed out from the League of Oregon Cities, they can and are a very successful tool in creating economic development and stimulating growth in business. However, having some sort of sideboards and the discussion we appreciate that you're having today with respect to school districts and also public safety agencies, police and fire particularly, is an excellent exercise in sort of just refreshing and reviewing what might be done better with urban renewal agencies. While some urban renewal districts might focus on bringing business and promoting economic development, there are some urban renewal agencies that are engaging in projects like building walking trails, putting in sidewalks in an industrial area, and whether or not that actually benefits the community and whether or not those funds could be better used is really a decision that urban renewal agency board of directors gets to make. And it's really out of the hands of the local community at that point, other than having the elected officials making that decision. A couple of issues, too, related to the issue of termination, which I think you've discussed somewhat. At some point, there really does become a point of when will it ever end? And I think Mr. Gorman will address that issue of urban renewal agencies that just continue to issue debt when they get close to finishing their projects. They just issue more debt. And there's one urban renewal agency in Clackamas County in particular that is slated to go for 33 years before it's terminated. And that does have a serious, significant fiscal impact on rural fire protection districts. Our comments today, too, are really geared toward the fire districts and not the city municipal departments. And both Kyle and Alec will address a couple of concepts that they would like the committee to consider with respect to urban renewal. One concept regarding after 15 years of an urban renewal district being in existence, having mandatory removal of rural fire protection districts from the division of tax. And then also some local flexibility for urban renewal agencies, both city and county, to choose up front or at any point during the urban their urban renewal process to let fire districts out of the division of tax. So with that, I will turn it over to Kyle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kyle Gorman. I'm the executive officer with Clackamas County Fire District Number 1. I'm also a resident of the city of Portland, so I actually get hit by urban renewal twice, first in my public life and also in my private life. I would say up front that the fire district is not fundamentally opposed to urban renewal. We do believe that there are projects and benefits that urban renewal provides. What we are opposed to is the fact that urban renewal has no limits, and that once one is in place, they never seem to end. In fact, in Clackamas County, no urban renewal area has ever been terminated. In 1980, when the first urban renewal plan started, the Clackamas Town Center plan, remember the rules were different in 1980. The urban renewal agency had to ask our permission and had to get our input. And they told us at the time that they would only have the urban renewal agency open for 5 years, and so we agreed. We said, we'll allow you to operate this plan for 5 years. And, of course, in the early 80s, you'll recall that the economy was not so great. And so they came back to us in 1984 and said, we'd like to extend this for another 5 years. And again, we said, okay, we understand the economy's been bad. Well, then the rules changed, and they no longer had to come back and ask our permission. And then the urban renewal agency just seemed to go on forever. I will say, with that in mind, it has so impacted the fire district that today we run about 40% of our emergency calls within the geopolitical boundaries of the urban renewal district, and we receive about 10% of our revenues for that response. The impact on us is huge. And that does not even account for the number of fire inspections and the investment in making the community safe that we have to do that is outside of the bricks and mortar requirement of what urban renewal is designed to do. And I think in terms of how urban renewal works, it does provide infrastructure. It does provide for some of those bricks and mortar. But in terms of serving that community, it doesn't do you any good to have streets and buildings and homes if you can't protect them. And we can't protect them anymore. We have fewer firefighters serving the territory now than we did in 1980 when the urban renewal plan started. And, of course, the safety requirements are much, much higher now than they were back in those days. As Hasina mentioned, we have two basic proposals that we would like the committee to consider together or separately, hopefully together. The first is to put a definite sunset on a fire district's term within the division of taxes portion of the urban renewal district. We think that term ought to be 15 years. If the urban renewal district is incapable of accomplishing its goals in 15 years, then it ought to dissolve and start all over again. And there's nothing that would prevent them from starting a new urban renewal district after the old one goes away. That would allow the assessed value to roll back onto the tax rolls, and they could start all over with a new frozen base. We're not opposed to that. The second one is an issue.
Can I ask you a question on that first
sure.
one? Because and I do appreciate that's what we're looking for is suggestions in terms of how to. That's kind of where I'm getting to is that urban renewal is a good tool, but we might need to put some sideboards or some. For lack of a better word, make it more difficult to just simply create a district or extend a district. The concern I have with, and it's in Mayor Williams' proposal also, is with the 15 years taking fire automatically out or taking schools out, just automatically is that if you're trying to lure, I'm thinking of if I'm a private developer and urban renewal at its best is trying to lure me in and do something really special in this blighted area. If I see that 15-year in-state statute and fires out, and perhaps then school is out, what is my ability at that point to really buy into, to make that big capital investment that I'm going to make as a private entity, if I know in 15 years they're going to be out, and so a lot of these parks or roads or streetcars or in Astoria's case, the train, if I know they're going to be out, then to me, in some ways, that would negate my incentive to put my money in, which is what we ultimately want them to do.
Well, I think there's multiple questions there, and there's let me walk through it a little bit. First, there's two sets of private investors in the Urban Renewal Agency. There's the people that finance the projects, and there are the people that build the projects. We think that if the project is completed in the 15 years, it's the projects that attract additional investment. The problem is that the maturities of the financing don't match the maturities of the projects. So you have extended maturities on financing, meaning 20 or 25 or 30 years before the money's paid back, and relatively short-term projects. So we think that actually inhibits the ability for investors to stay long-term in the project. As one example, in the town center area, we have a building that is relatively new. It's about 2 or 3 years old. It's Video Electronics Store, I think. That building, that individual building, has been rebuilt 3 times in the last 12 years. That means it has been bulldozed to the ground and rebuilt again within the boundaries of the urban renewal area. And the problem is, you know, the time frame of the projects is actually shorter because the urban renewal agencies have the opportunity to continue to rebuild these. We think there ought to be longer focus on projects, shorter focus on financing, and get these projects to match up. You know, one of the benefits of urban renewal is they are able to assemble properties in a way that really the private investment can't do quite so well. And we recognize that that's one of the big benefits. The problem is,
sir was asking.
I hate to interrupt, but could you walk us through a little bit more about this building project? three times as to what they did.
I was curious.
We're not really sure. What we know is that as part of the urban renewal project, they built the infrastructure. Developers came in, built a building, used it for a commercial retail establishment.
What was the building?
It was originally a pizza, Firehouse Pizza, in fact. It was a pizza, ironically. it was a pizza parlor.
So with urban renewal funds?
Well, the infrastructure to attract the development was built with urban renewal funds.
Right. So it's a standalone building.
Freestanding building, exactly.
Right. Like you'd see in a strip center.
Yeah, except it was freestanding. Yeah, right. I mean, it's, you know, street corner, there's a building, parking lot, you know, a few trees,
kind
so
of
on.
General pizza type.
Yeah, pizza, freestanding pizza okay. Restaurant, except it was pretty large. So then, of course, that building, you know, the developers and the builders got paid, so they got out of it. The business, for whatever reason, didn't make it. A new buyer comes along, building doesn't meet their needs, so they bulldoze it and rebuild it. That building was, I think, a light shop or something like that. That didn't meet their needs. New developer comes along, raises the building, and then raises another building. And now I think it's an electronics store of some kind. But the problem for us is that, well, yes, the Urban Renewal Agency has done its job in, I guess, attracting that development. Although once the development is attracted, has the Urban Renewal Agency added anything more to the equation? Probably not. I mean, once that first building is built, there's really no more infrastructure that's required to build the second building. And really the private market ought to be allowed to decide what happens after that. I think at some point urban renewal tends to interfere with the private market, and sometimes it actually enhances. But I think once that original cycle starts, then anything else doesn't really add value to the system. Our issue, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, the core of your answer to me was that 15-year in some ways would be a good endpoint for, because I'm looking at it from, if I'm not the private bond seller, but the private developer, I'm the pizza owner in this case, although that's right. Not really what I envisioned in terms of the pizza mm-hmm. owner or the, is 15 years, do I still build my Pizza Hut or Firehouse Pizza store? If I know you guys, if part of the public investment, the urban renewal investment is going to be out.
Yeah, the answer is of course, because if you're a private developer, you're going to want to make sure that you have enough return on your money to return it in 6 or 7 or 8 years.
Well, I want to make sure that the street gets built, and hopefully maybe, I don't know if light rail is going to run by that my pizza store at some point, or if they're using it for that. Or, but I just want to make sure, you know, I would think if I'm the private entity that's coming into this, that I want to make sure that all the public investment is there before I plunk down. Hopefully, if I'm a good private developer, before I plunk down $25 million to build, you know, a shopping center or whatever.
You're absolutely right. You want to make sure that you have the market for whatever product it is here.
Yeah, and with that 15-year, with your first proposal, would that in some way inhibit me from doing that? But you answered
my question. I think not. I don't think there'd be any inhibitions at 15 years. I think you're just fine. I think the bond market is perfectly willing to sell bonds at 15-year maturities. Happens all the time.
Before I ask Senator Deckard, I think one of the issues, too, that we have discussed among ourselves was at least you would know up front that in 15 years, Rural Fire Protection District money would be going back on the tax roll, and you would know that going into the project and have that the opportunity to evaluate that up front, and whether or not it's Rural Fire Protection Districts and school districts or what have you, it would be something, the known versus the unknown in the second proposal.
And you could structure your bonds accordingly, because rural fire protection districts are only one portion of all of the taxes that are applied to urban renewal. Just let me talk ever so briefly about Clackamas County and some of our frustration. First, the county, which in our case is operated by the county commissioners, they don't need our permission to extend an urban renewal district. They don't need our permission to start an urban renewal district. They don't need anybody's permission to approve the budget or the project plan for urban renewal districts. That's totally outside of our purview. If we are incapable of providing services to the growth that takes place within the boundaries of the urban renewal district, we don't have any say in how much growth that occurs. That's totally within the purview of the urban renewal agencies. And it's very frustrating for us. We believe there's a current proposal to rebuild the Clackamas Town Center, which you will remember was the reason that the urban renewal plan was brought into place in the first place. Now we're going to rebuild the Clackamas Town Center to the tune of something like $100-some-odd million. So it's actually outlived the urban renewal agency has outlived the project that it was originally started to develop. And with the number of new businesses and the number of new projects that will be in place on the footprint of the Clackamas Town Center, we will require almost two full-time fire inspectors during the development of this process just to make sure that those buildings are safe for the community that will be using those. And that includes reviewing the plans for construction, you know, ongoing inspections of the buildings as they're built. I mean, this is, it is a very significant impact on us. Now, some of that construction will happen outside the boundaries of the urban renewal area, so we will get some tax benefit from it, but not near enough for the resources that we'll have to commit to make sure that building takes place. So when yesterday, when you were talking about the opportunity costs, and I thought the City Club of Portland did a very good presentation on how to analyze opportunity costs or why it's rarely analyzed. I think fire districts are one of the most significant opportunity costs that you have to consider. Within the boundaries of our fire district, we covered 9% of all the urban renewal assessed value in the state of Oregon. And that's just one fire district. I mean, it's huge for us. It costs us about $1.7 million a year in lost revenues that go to urban renewal rather than to the fire district. That's about 1 2/3 fire stations. So we've given up fire stations and public safety to the tune of almost two fire stations in order to accommodate this growth. To compound it, outside the boundaries of urban renewal, we've received growth. The areas of Happy Valley and rural Clackamas County, which we cover, have a lot of new housing. Well, the problem for us with new housing is it costs us more to serve new housing than we receive in taxes. It's relatively low tax value construction. So what that means is that at least nationwide, and we haven't analyzed it for our service, but nationwide it costs about $1.13 for each dollar that you receive in taxes on residential property. Costs about 87 cents for each dollar that you receive on commercial and industrial property. So it's easier for us to serve the concentrated properties in industrial and commercial areas, and they receive far fewer medical calls and other sorts of calls. So it's really compounded. So we don't get the tax value on the things that we need. We do get the tax value, but also the work on the things that we don't need. So it hits us twice. Finally, I just want to comment on urban renewal excess value. The Clackamas Town Center area has a frozen base of something like $35 million, $36 million. The excess value on the Clackamas Town Center is $409 million. So what that means is that we are serving the Clackamas Town Center for 1980 prices without a COLA adjustment and serving an area that has now grown to be over 10 times its original value. And the impact on us is significant. I'm going to turn this over to Alec Jensen. I do have an answer to your question on COLA adjustment and maybe some language that you can consider on that. So keep that in mind.
Okay, and make sure you get the Dr. Al is compiling these as we go, suggestions so that we can kind of look at the end of this at the 7 or 8 or now 10 suggestions that we have. Mr. Jensen.
Chair Deckert, members of the committee, thank you. I want to give you a slightly different perspective on this fire district's Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue's experience with urban renewal. A couple of great examples, I think, of how we've worked with urban renewal is in the Wilsonville area. When they wanted to create an urban renewal district down there, they participated with the fire district, and we have now Villebois, that many of you certainly read about, that will be Oregon's safest community. We required that, working with the city of Wilsonville, it's going to be a fully sprinkled community with every occupancy in there. I currently serve on the Technical Advisory Committee for the 217 Commuter Rail Urban Renewal Project, at least in the feasibility phase, and we have a board member from Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue that serves on the Policy Advisory Committee. We consider this a wonderful opportunity to participate, and we are fully supportive of that urban renewal concept. With that said, our ability to impact these urban renewal decisions is based upon the great working relationship that we have with Washington County and our customer cities. And as you well know, that the relationships change over time. So we've had a good experience. But one of the things that concerns us is that, well, frankly, cities and counties in the course of conceptualizing or creating these urban renewal agencies don't have the ability to opt us out. I was intrigued by some of your questions earlier about whether school district board of directors ought to have a vote. And I interpreted that as some sort of a choice. From Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue's perspective, we're not even asking for that choice. We don't even know that that's reasonable or even feasible. But what we would like, and Michelle Deister used the term that urban renewal is a flexible tool. I believe it is a flexible tool, and what we would like to see is one more element of flexibility inserted in the process, and that specific piece is that cities and counties have the ability, can make their choice for whatever reason to opt us out at the beginning. And I can think of any number of reasons why they may want to do that. So from our perspective, in terms of inserting a concept that you may want to flesh out a little bit, please consider that as an option. Again, we've had a good experience with urban renewal. It's worked well for us. But with that said, it's all relationship-based. And currently, that is a tool that does not exist for cities and counties in considering the creation of an urban renewal agency to opt the fire district out or to opt the school district out or any other local government that may be impacted. In the course of the commuter rail project right now, we're in the course of discussing some of the fire infrastructure needs that we have, and we may be likely be the direct beneficiary, but in other scenarios we may not be. We may have just made that critical infrastructure investment to build or replace fire stations, and we don't then become the beneficiary, direct or frankly even sometimes indirect, of the creation of an urban renewal agency. And we believe that cities and counties ought to be able to have that discussion and make a decision about whether they want to impact the fire district or not.
Mm-hmm. So your second proposal is just allowing, and Ms. Williams yesterday, who was formerly with Portland Development Commission, had at least somewhat, though not directly similar, that it gives cities and counties more flexibility to not bond the full amount, or I guess your second proposal would be just allow them to say, we don't want we want to take out police and fire on this one.
That is specifically the only concept that I'm...
Chair Deckert, members of the committee, Hasina Squires with Special Districts Association of Oregon, may be a little bit more delicate with police because it's municipal, mm-hmm. in that department. Mm-hmm. For rural fire protection districts, it would be much simpler because it would be ORS 478 special districts that would not be subject to division of tax from mm-hmm. the creation and inception of the plan.
Mm-hmm. Has it been your experience that you mentioned that in Washington County and your city jurisdictions, and I'm just curious about Clackamas, that how did the, when they're thinking of, well, we want to do this, so we're looking at a new urban renewal district, what form does their communication take when they're venturing out to do this with, I know you can't speak for the school districts, but with the fire district?
Oddly enough, Senator Deckert, that you should ask that question, because we just found out, just coincidentally, a few days ago, that the county Board of Commissioners had voted to, while not authorize new urban renewal districts in Clackamas County, but at least proceed with the process. We had no idea that they were moving in that direction. So at least to date, the process has been very informal at best.
There's no, okay.
And Chair Deckard, I'll
between the lines there.
If I may, I'll just offer our experience in the context of the 217 commuter rail project. Jeff Tashman, who's in the room and is working as a consultant for Washington County, came with Charlie Cameron, the county administrator, 2 years ago and sat down with us and engaged us very early on in the staff level. And so we were very grateful for that opportunity. Again, though, it's entirely relationship-based. And like I said, relationships change. Before I'm done, if I can comment on one other observation about today's testimony. A couple of times there's been a reference made to a time-specific life, if you will, of the Urban Renewal Agency. And urban renewal is something that it's a small part of my job and something that I'm sure I don't fully understand. But something struck me recently in a conversation I was having with somebody about this notion that it's only a 20-year window. And while it may be a 20-year window or some other defined window that the agency actually exists or I guess that's the best way to describe it.
The plan.
But hypothetically, if you issue bonds and you're 18 of a 20-year plan and those bonds don't get paid off until year 30, and even year 30 doesn't end it because now you are recovering and there are scenarios where you can be 40-plus years out before you're even made whole, before you even start to recover.
So have you locked in at that point? I mean, that was the question that we were discussing. And Senator Metzger again asked about it. So are you then locked in at, say you did that 40-year scenario. At the end of 40 years, are they frozen at, if it's 2020, at 1980?
No, you would be frozen, and I defer to somebody who understands it better than me, but my understanding is you would be frozen until the debt is paid off. And then at that point, then it comes back on the rolls of the current AV, but you're still in the recovery phase. You're still not made whole because now you're playing catch-up.
For whatever. 18, 20 years,
right.
That'd be.
More like 40 years or 60 years.
Huh.
I mean, in the case of the Clackamas Town Center area, at least the current plan puts them out 33 to 35 years before the plan is complete. But then beyond that, there's debt that they're obligated to pay off prior to returning the property back to the rolls. So it just extends beyond the life of the plan.
Thank you very much. It seems the questions in the committee...
Very clear.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. It seems to me sideboards might need to be put in place in terms of, or a little more formality in terms of when...
Maybe some larger sideboards.
That's right. Surfboards. Or but before we jump to conclusions, we should hear from Mr. Lazenby and Mr. Tashman. If you want to come up together or separately, whatever your pleasure.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Chip, do you want to go first? Or you, what's your pleasure, Mr. Chair?
Well, Chip, you're... Boy, they're bringing all my friends up here, too. They're... please, Jeff.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chip Lazenby. I'm general counsel with the Portland Development Commission. I have distributed two pieces of information for you this morning. One of them you'll find is a plain white paper sheaf that has color diagrams and photos, and the other is a brochure that has been prepared by the Portland Development Commission. We talked yesterday generally about urban renewal. I'm not going to the prepared pamphlet actually has a lot of history about PDC, which I'm not going to take up my time. But I think in lieu of the conversation that has gone on in the last 2 days around urban renewal and the but-for effect and all those other things, what I'd like the committee to do is to draw your attention to the tab that's marked urban renewal benefits and in the colored brochure. It's indexed along the tab along the outside. I think if you look at this is a snapshot of the chart that's on the middle of page 9. Shows you some of the benefits of urban renewal to the extent of our five Option 3 districts that existed in 2002, and you can see the value of the property within those districts at the start and what the current value is, and this is as of 2002. So these numbers are actually about 3 years old, and that appreciation has continued. There's a relationship here between the average increase, average annual growth and assessed value across all those, and I can tell you that for the city of Portland, the average increase in assessed value runs roughly between 4% and 5%. So you can see that in all of these districts, we have outstripped that. In all but one of them, we have doubled that amount in terms of, more than doubled that amount in terms of increased assessed valuation. If you go to page, I'm sorry for flipping around here. Well, what I'd like to do is go to that. You see on the opposing page that there's a citywide average as shown in the other graph. In my prepared materials, this first page is the graph that Ms. Williams drew somewhat. She's a lawyer, not an artist. But it lays that out a little more in terms of the fixed base and the way the increment goes, especially for option 3 districts on page 2. You can see that there is this anticipation that there is going to be an increase in the tax increment. There's a special levy, and there is a division of taxes that occurs. Anything above that line where it says tax increment, those monies, once the AV has reached a certain level, are returned to those districts that are our contributing districts.
So that's the orange line.
That's right. That's right. And that's more graphically laid out on page 5, as you can see. And this is just for one urban renewal district, but it's fairly typical, I think, of the districts that are going on in Portland. This is the downtown waterfront district. It shows you from years 1998 through year 2004, the each bar represents the division of taxes, which is what a lot of the discussion has been about here, the annual division of taxes in which urban renewal participates along with schools and cities and counties. The downtown waterfront's an option 3 district, so it has the ability to do a special levy, which is something that the local city council can impose in order to meet its debt obligations. The yellow portion of that, though, are taxes that are collected on the increased assessed valuation that don't go to the divide the taxes for the urban renewal and that aren't a part of the special levy. Those are values that are returned to all of the taxing jurisdictions, the schools and the county and the city, in terms of participating in the increased valuation that's occurred because of the investment that's occurred there. If you turn to page 7,
this might be a dumb question, but so I'm looking at the yellow, mm-hmm. the yellow area, and If I'm frozen, say the urban renewal district started in 1990, and you had the success that you presented on that first slide of you outstripped every other area except for one and almost doubled. But if I'm frozen at...
Down here in the orange part.
Sure. If I'm frozen at my 1980 level, plus 3%, 3%, 3%, how does schools, police, and fire benefit that greatly, even if the property value, even if we had that success, because they're still back in the 1990s in terms of property value?
They get the frozen base, plus they get the increased AV above the debt service for urban renewal.
Assess the AV?
Yes. So when you get to those things where, as in an older district like this, where you have excess AV because of the investments that have occurred, you get the frozen base plus you get those additionals. It's part of the conversation that you and I had, that a number of the districts will look at the monies they have and not look behind them and see where it came from.
So the Pearl District, for example. 10 years out,
right,
or whenever it's done, say it's done in 20 years, and property values were here in 1995, and then in 2015, they're way up here. Where is...
If the debt service that we need is right at the level of your nose in that physical piece that you were giving me,
uh-huh.
above that line, that value is being returned to the districts for the most part, as I understand.
Not for the new districts.
Not for the new districts, sorry. This is for the old districts, is what we're talking about here. So.
Pre-4750. Okay.
But for the older districts, that's being returned, right? That's being returned to the schools and to the other districts. It, to the extent that it's above the debt service and the other pieces that are there.
Could I respond?
Sure.
Mr.
Yeah.
Chair,
yes.
Jeff Tashman, representing Association of Oregon Redevelopment Agencies. There is a huge difference between plans that existed before 4750 and plans afterwards. And the plans after 4750 return value when they're completed, whereas some of the plans, notably these Option 3 plans, and Portland has four of those, four of their biggest areas are Option 3 plans, they begin returning value right away. And have returned substantial amounts of value, as he showed. But the districts post 96 benefit the taxing districts only after they're completed.
So it is one of the sacrifices. I mean, you would agree then, and I don't want to get Chip off as he was well in his presentation. I kind of got us off here. But you would agree it's one of the sacrifices that we would make for police, fire, and schools.
In the newer districts.
In the new district,
the
like
new
the
district.
Pearl or
right.
South Waterfront or this Clackamas County one.
If I could add just one point, the change in the 2001 legislature is significant because what that does is that if a district approves a local option levy or a new bond levy, they immediately get the benefits of the growth in the urban renewal district. Plans that were adopted after 2001, voters approve a local option, they get more revenue from the local option because no money goes to urban renewal from that local option. If they sell bonds, all of the assessed value is used to pay off the bonds. None of the value produces money for urban renewal. So that's an improvement.
Because it becomes a new frozen base
mm-hmm.
From the older districts when you make that migration.
So Chip, I got you way off.
That's right. Well, anyway, if you continue to go through the white piece, I think in the older districts such as downtown Waterfront, you can see what the effect that Jeff was talking about. For instance, on page 8, when you compare the amount of incremental AV that's being used for urban renewal purposes in the blue column and the incremental AV that's been released to the taxing districts in the yellow column, what you see is that not only does the percentage of incremental AV that's released increase over a period of time, but the amount of incremental AV that's being used by the urban renewal district declines in proportion to what's being released to the taxing districts. As you go through this, and I'm not going to go through it chart by chart, but as you go through, you'll see that is in some ways borne out in the next chart. The other piece that I wanted to point out, and it's also been a part of the conversation, and in the white handout, it begins on page 16. And it talks about a couple of the case studies within our downtown waterfront. The first one is Pioneer Place, where PDC made a contribution of $32 million, but there was a private contribution of $115 million that was made there. As you turn the page, you'll see that for the River Place, PDC made a contribution of $23.5 million, and there was a private contribution of $60.8 million. And finally, for the 2100 River Parkway building, PDC made a contribution of $700,000, and there was a private contribution of $15.5 million. We can decry all we want to the fact that when we try to lure businesses and private money into our cities to do economic development, create jobs both on the construction end and permanently, that the private interests look to and require some form of public subsidy. A lot of this, especially in these areas, goes to environmental remediation that would make the project feasible without some sort of public subsidy that goes along with it. But I think you can see the leverage effect that the public contribution really ends up doing. And then I'd like to make some general comments, and then I'll turn it over to Jeff. You've heard a lot of conversation in the last couple of days about how a number of the people that participate in urban renewal financing don't have any say, or there's no need for urban renewal agencies to get permission to do the things that they do. The organization that I work for is really an anomaly. Portland Development Commission is a separately chartered entity. In most of these instances, the Urban Renewal Agency is merely the City Council or the County Commissioners taking off that hat and putting on their Urban Renewal hat and acting. So you really are talking about elected officials who are as responsive as you are to the voters and sensitive to the needs of the citizens that are out there. So I want to suggest that from that perspective, that may not be as a significant factor for you to act on as you think about.
Chip, can I just ask you on that one? And sorry to interrupt you again. So what would be the problem, I'm just thinking this through, of having some sort of formalizing that communication with the affected fire, school districts, just to, I mean, you've been here the last few days and kind of heard where the sense of the committee is, both in the kind of yanking folks out, for lack of a better word, but putting, you've heard a lot of talk about, well, perhaps it should be more difficult or a more strenuous task to creating an urban renewal district, and to me that seems part of it is doing what Washington County did, but formalizing that and saying you're going to bring the players in, or as Story said, they did it, but formalizing that and say we're going to bring them in a formal way, in a statutory way, and say we want to get their check off that these really are projects that will ultimately benefit our whole region.
I think there's some complications that maybe Eric can talk about in terms of the financial markets. I can only speak to PDC's experience and what we do. We really do a roadshow with our budget every year. We go to the special districts. We go to the county. Obviously, we go to the city. We go to the school boards and the school administrators, and we meet with them and talk in detail about our budget and what's involved in it and what the impacts are in terms of their tax revenues that are there. So we already do that. I don't know whether a formal process would, in other areas would bog this down. I know that we have 10 active urban renewal districts right now and are really reaching sort of the ceiling of our ability perhaps to do more. So as a practical matter, it might not really affect Portland that directly. I think that there may be some political complications in doing that could affect everything that gets thrown into the bond in order to gain cross-jurisdictional approval if you make it formal. And I think that could make it more difficult to obtain clean funding in a model that the bond markets recognize as being standard. There's also some concern that I have, and I will supply to Dr. Ayala, a study that was done by the Brookings Institution that studied what I think are abuses of the urban renewal process in St. Louis and in some other cities where too much portability of funds was brought into the statute and they were allowed to move monies around in terms of what the real impact and direct value of that was. And I think the committee should review at least a synopsis of that Brookings study with some care. But let me conclude a little bit by talking about what I think is one of the fundamental sort of public policy issues that the committee has to grapple with here. If you look at the legislature, and I've worked down here for a number of years, there comes a point in time when you get a revenue forecast that you have to live with, and that determines how much money is going to be in your bowl to spend on state programs and employment and things like that over a period of time. And that's really a spending model. If you look at urban renewal just as a fundamental process, what the urban renewal agencies do, whether it's us or any of the others, is they take a stream of revenue and they show that to the bond markets and they borrow money against that. And they borrow the money up front and they make investments. That's the deal they make with the bond markets, is they're going to borrow the money, they're going to invest it, and that there's going to be a stream of money there to repay that over a period of time. That looks like the same thing. It looks like money going out the door. But there's a real difference between a spending model and an investment model and what underpins them and what needs to happen in that. So as you look at these proposals to do that, I think the investment model is something that you ought to keep in mind, because in many respects, the jurisdictions, and my commission has really appreciated this and has really made a point of reaching out to all of our constituent jurisdictions that contribute funds to us. But I think we ought to treat them like as an investment pool. One of the charts in the white material shows you that there is, and demonstrates, I think it's the yellow line on a page. Can go back. I see you starting to look, Mr. Chair, and see if I can find it. But there's a, it talks about the school revenues. I think it's on 18. I think that's right. Realize that after 5 and 47 and 50, what happens to that appreciation of school funds in Portland, just in this one district, is that they come down here to Salem and they do augment the school fund, and not 100% of those dollars migrate back into the Portland area. So when someone says, well, there's no benefit to urban renewal dollars that go on in Portland to somebody in Baker City, that data sort of belies that because of the way we fund K through 12 schools. Some of the arguments that I think the committee is going to hear as we delve deeper into this question of urban renewal and how it fits in the overall fabric run along the lines of saying, yes, but you know, we're in tough economic times now, and so as a result, we maybe need to spend less on these things and spend more over here on schools. With respect, let me suggest that if you keep the investment model in mind, that's a little bit like saying we can no longer afford our mortgage, so let's become renters again. You know, you lose the value of the investment if you move off in that direction. And finally, let me just make a suggestion as well for the committee to consider as these proposals come in, to think about finding some balance in it. It may very well be that the constituent jurisdictions may not have adequate enough say with their locally elected officials in terms of making these decisions about urban renewal. But what that decision constitutes is them all becoming a part of an investment pool. The data coming out of Portland, and I think the data from a number of other jurisdictions, shows that there certainly is appreciation that happens. It happens over a long period of time. There is some immediate there. If you're going to provide an opportunity for the investors to get out, then maybe you should also consider that you should do an inverse frozen base cap, that they should no longer, after that point, participate in the appreciation of the AV and the value that occurs there. It's just a balanced idea.
Where would the money go?
Well, it would go to the other jurisdictions that remained in the investment pool. So, I mean, it's just an idea. I mean, we're collecting ideas. And I think that provides some balance. I mean, if you look at it as an investment pool, there ought to be some basis for making that decision. That's a risk-reward decision that the others are making, because a lot of these are risk-reward decisions that are made even on the front end of these. As Senator Prezansky pointed out in one of his questions earlier, then I appreciated his comments, was, isn't it difficult to say for certainty what the growth is going to be or what the benefit's going to be? That goes back to this really being an investment mechanism, and there should be some risk-reward in that decision of whether or not to stay in and see it to the end and gain the entire value of the original investment. Mm-hmm. And if you want to get out, then you take your winnings at that point. Mm-hmm. So it's just a suggestion just to keep the concepts alive.
The concept is alive, although.
Mr. Tassman.
Mr. Chair, Jeff Tashman representing AORA. I'd like to just get into the record some pieces of testimony that I didn't deliver yesterday, but I don't want to take your time talking about that in particular. What I wanted to note were just a few things that are...
And unfortunately, we've eaten up most of the time, so if you could...
I'll take a minute.
Yeah, great.
Okay. Current law requires that when you do an urban renewal plan, you do a fiscal impact analysis on the overlapping taxing districts, and that has to be in black and white. Part of the report has to be shared with the public and with the taxing districts. Existing law requires urban renewal agencies to consult and confer with the overlapping taxing districts, and if you wanted to get more formal about when that, you know, at what point in the process that occurs, you could certainly do that. Right now, it's just somewhere during the process. As a fact of life, every plan that I've worked on in the last 4 to 5 years has been very early consultation with the affected taxing districts. If you wanted to, you know, if there was a desire to make that a more formal requirement, it wouldn't change. It would be fine.
So you're fine. Okay, that's important to know. So you're fine with formalizing the communications with
absolutely
them.
Because it's a fact of life. You need to talk to these people right from the start anyway, and if you wanted to make that a requirement, it wouldn't change the way we do business. Each plan does have a limit of maximum indebtedness. The amount of bonds that each plan can issue is limited in the plan, and if at any point that number, the agency wants to increase that number, they have to repeat the whole process of the whole procedural requirements for doing a new plan have to be repeated if they're going to increase the size of that maximum indebtedness. So that is a limit. And so there are a lot of requirements in the statutes that get to where you want to go. You could get more specific about some of them in terms of timing of process, and that would be fine. What I would have to say is that when you advisory votes would be fine. The critical issue is if you start to require approval of overlapping taxing districts, the experience in other states has shown that what happens is you start spending an enormous amount of money doing projects that may not be the best projects for the area, but keep those overlapping taxing districts happy.
So they say you go to the fire district and they say, we'll sign off as long as
we build a new fire station.
We get this.
Like
now, in my experience, the needs and the concerns of the overlapping districts are taken into account right at the beginning, and these plans are pretty fair when they finally get done because they've been worked over. And so I think that process works. I think going beyond an advisory vote is very, very dangerous.
Well, what are the ramifications if the advisory vote is no? I mean, we deal with advisory votes all the time, and they can be well.
I think that if you're looking to ensure that the overlapping taxing districts learn of, you know, the urban renewal intent of a city early, that they get a formal presentation. And that they're, you know, right now, the statutes say that if any of these districts provide a comment in writing, when the plan is adopted, the municipality has to specifically respond to that comment.
Well, how about the Clackamas County scenario, which I've heard over, and I've heard more, and I apologize to get you right at 10:30 here, but where they didn't, there was no communication, and
well, I would certainly encourage you to speak to the staff of the Clackamas County Development Agency to get their point of view. I know that what Clackamas County Development Agency has done is done major reductions to the size of both the town center and to their Clackamas Industrial Area District for the purpose of getting more money back to the overlapping taxing districts. You know, beyond that, I would encourage you to speak to the staff of the county to get their perspective.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, fellow Beaverton tonight and Duck fan.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Eric Johansson. I'm the debt manager at the City of Portland. In that role, I'm responsible for the issuance of bonds for the city's 11 urban renewal areas. We currently have about $300 million of outstanding long-term debt for these various districts. I had a lot of comments. I want to just put them down to one particular issue. Last fall, we were in San Francisco to talk to the bond rating agencies and the bond insurers. Believe me, our urban renewal system, our property tax system, is very, very complicated. I have to carry around a chart these days that outline the four different type of urban renewal areas that we have and the various tax rates that go into the consolidated tax rate. Add on to that Measure 5, RMV-based compression, Measure 50, special compression, 3% growth. Their eyes begin to glaze over very quickly when we start to describe Oregon's property tax system. So what I want to caution against here is getting too tricky trying to satisfy all of the particular needs of everyone with respect to, you know, opting out of a particular tax rate, because I think we're getting to that point now where if we go much further, I'm not sure, you know, that we're going to be able to achieve the kind of bond ratings and bond insurance interest just because they're just going to be too confused by the system that we have in place. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just want to urge caution in tweaking the system too finely.
Great. Appreciate that. Concise and brevity and pointed, which is very good testimony to have as we conclude today's Vice Chair Starr, thoughts or comments or questions?
No, I do appreciate the information, and I'm sorry I missed part of the presentation this morning, but I'll look at the notes and very much very concerned that we move ahead. The opportunity to expand business was stepped way up this morning with the announcement from Intel. So looks like things are looking up a bit.
Yeah, that was a big announcement. Well, here's what I'd like to do. We've had 2 days of this. I'm of the mind that of the 13 ideas that we got, and you can kind of put them in a few different categories of kind of the opt-out category of raising the bar and making it, I guess, more stringent in terms of when folks would want to go out into an urban renewal district. There's a category there. And then there's just another one of kind of technical governance changes. And to me, you've got those three categories. So if the groups could huddle, if your group could, and nominate one person to talk further with us, who has the time to spend a little bit of time down here, I'll ask both the fire district and Hasina and the school folks, if Mayor Williams cares to be, and I think he does, to continue his involvement. And then one or two of us can kind of ride herd over that group. We'll try to sort through the different proposals. LRO staff, I'll ask them to just kind of organize them for us and make them as clear as possible, and be conscious of your comments, Mr. Johansson, of not further, if possible, complicating when you're down talking to bond rating agencies. But I really do believe it is my opinion that at the very least there ought to be changes, and there perhaps should be more stringency in terms of when a jurisdiction wants to go out and create a new urban renewal district, that be a higher bar crossed when they do it. And that would be where I think I would ask this group to move and use 412 as the vehicle to do that. With that, we're over by 5 minutes, and I'll close I should just make sure, anyone else want to testify? Great. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 412, and we are adjourned.